and welcome back to the Deeper Podcast. I'm Austin Slater. That's Dan Kinnis, and we are back again. This is almost episode 52, I think. So officially a year's worth of episodes, or we're getting pretty darn close.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Which is super cool. And we've got another trivia moment, Dan.
Okay.
I'm here to test your knowledge.
Yeah, lay it on me.
Do you and your family like going to the beach, Dan? Are you guys beach people?
We go occasionally.
Occasionally. I'm a beach fiend.
Okay.
I love going to the beach. I did not get to do it a lot growing up necessarily. And so now that I'm living in West Michigan next to a super nice beach, yeah, we go as much as we can.
Mm-hmm.
And so it got me thinking, what country in the world has the most beaches, has the most shoreline? So I'm going to present you with four options here. These are the top four
coastline
having nations.
All right. I think I might know this one.
You might know this one?
I might be wrong. But
you might be wrong. All right.
Hopefully
so
it's at least one of the options.
Is it A, Indonesia?
Okay.
B, Norway? C, Russia? Or D, Canada?
You know, you can get tricky with, like, you know, who owns Greenland and all that, but I think it is Canada.
You're correct. It is Canada. So Canada has, and this is kind of crazy to me, Canada has 125,567 miles worth of coastline.
That's a lot.
That is a ridiculous amount of coastline.
Yeah.
Second comes in with actually Norway, which has 64,000, and then Indonesia with 34,000.
Mm.
It's just, it's mind-boggling to me that Canada can have as many beaches as the three next countries combined.
Yeah.
And none of those beaches are beaches that I really want to go to.
Yeah.
So probably
Polar Bear Plunge.
So I probably won't be visiting any of the 125,000 miles worth of beach in Canada. But at least they're trying. They're heading in the right direction.
It's a lot of land.
It's a lot of land.
A lot of land to cover that coastline.
And for comparison here, I looked this up. In Michigan, we've got 3,000. 3,288 miles of land as compared to, you know, Canada's 125,000.
Yeah.
Order several orders of magnitude. Just a fun little bit there. But now we can get to the meat of the episode. Dan, we got to hit a juicy sermon on Sunday talking about faith. Can you break that down for us?
Yes. Just like Canada's gargantuan coastline, we talked about the biggest piece of armor, the shield of faith.
So, I like that.
It's my best effort at a segue. But,
perfect.
I was really looking forward to this particular message. They've all been just insightful for me and helpful for me. But this one is kind of emphasized. We made that point even in the text itself. Paul gives it a little more verbiage and even a purpose about the arrows of the evil one. So we just dove in and talked about the shield of faith. We talked about how it's emphasized. We talked again about faith, this big topic, a little bit of what it is, and tried to summarize some of that, and then some variety of ways we can be putting this on. And just really felt the need to say this ties in with everything else, right? Mm-hmm. Everything comes together in our faith, God's power, God's promises. That's what we're activating around us when we put our faith in him. And so, it was for me, too, just a good reminder of this is a word we throw around a lot.
Absolutely.
And a concept, of course, we talk about, but with good reason. And we do need to stop and think about what we mean when we talk about faith every once in a while.
Yeah, there's a ton of that. And I loved the analogy we used of the Roman soldier's shield. And that's what I'm going to keep coming back to because I had a lot of questions. Part of that, some of them are definitely pulling from the analogy. And again, as always with analogies, sometimes I pull them too far. But I really love that imagery. And we kind of spent some time breaking down what these shields were and were not and what they had and didn't have. And one element that I thought was really cool that I would just love for you to talk a little bit more about just generically first off before I get into more specific questions. But the collective protection element of these shields. So these shields were, you know, they were big enough that we all could pretty safely hide behind them. But they were also used together and, like, in this interlocking fashion. We showed this picture of, I think it was a turtle formation is what it's called.
Yeah, basically.
And basically these shields just interlock, and it's this impenetrable barrier. It's super cool from an outside perspective. But I was just wondering, first, actually, if you could explain a little bit how faith is a protective tool for the people around us. We talked a bit about that in the sermon, but could you just go into a little more detail first?
Yeah, just, you know, standing together, I think just first and foremost, we understand that even without weapons, right, there's a strength in numbers. We talk about that. But with faith, you know, just this idea, we talked about how we can encourage each other in our faith, maybe sometimes correct each other, get us back on the right path, We've talked about it previous weeks in this series, kind of helping each other see maybe the ways the enemy is trying to get at us too. But yeah, sometimes too, you can kind of stand in someone else's stead, right? When they're feeling a little bit weakened in their faith, struggling that, you know, you can kind of say, hey, you know, you're reiterating the promises of God. Maybe when they're going through, they've lost a loved one, you know, you're in that position to say, you know, hey, God's still here and he's faithful and remember what he's done for us in Christ, things like that, and hopefully in a caring fashion. But so we can kind of stand, and or sometimes just together, we're seeing things change in the culture. Or, you know, I think about Christians in the early church who very much were a minority, and that strength they got standing together. I think of when Peter was arrested, and the rest of the believers were there praying, and they thought probably Peter was going to be killed because another apostle, James, already had been. And they're just standing together, and there was strength in that, and just being in the Lord's presence, and they're putting their faith in him, even though these circumstances aren't great. So just that really collective strength in numbers, and I think the unity of when we're doing it our best, right, this unity we have in the faith that Jesus prayed about back in John's gospel recorded there, it just allows us to stand strong together and to realize I don't just have to figure this out on my own. We're standing here together. Like when Elijah was reminded, hey, no, there's still hundreds of other people that it's not just you by yourself that are still remnants here in Israel, even at this bad time, just bolsters us up. And I think it's makes us even better protected from the enemy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and I love one of the things with the with that formation. And if you guys look up the formation again, you'll see this. But what's cool is they'll have, you know, one person in the front has their shield the normal way, and then the person behind them might put it over their head. And so what I love about that is that kind of shows like this collective element in that like you've got this area protected, but you're vulnerable here. Let me come alongside you and protect you here. Let me support you in this manner, and then by doing so, I'm exposing another part of my body, and so that means I have to trust someone else to protect me over here.
Right.
And it just keeps going and going, and it's such a cool way to illustrate like how intertwined our faith and our lived lives should be.
Yeah. Well, and even we talked about this, of course, the list of the armor here, we intended to put all of this on, of course, put on the full armor. But I think we've noted along the way how some of us might have a certain giftedness toward a certain area. You know, I might be really good and really interested in talking about what truth is, or someone else maybe is really good, you know, talking about the salvation aspect that will come up with the helmet of salvation. And so to make sure we're kind of covering each other, we talked about that militarily, right? In a military unit, there's usually a variety of skills with different weapons or different defenses. And to bring those together is really where you see this collective peace. I remember the movie, and who knows how true it is, but King Arthur, right? And kind of showed his, like, Knights of the Round Table and in this depiction, right? They all had some just different skills. You know, maybe Arthur was the great leader. Of course, good fighter as well, but you had this person who was skilled with the bow, right? Yeah. The bow and arrow. This one who was strong, maybe had a mace that they fought with. And
someone who's sneaky, who can sneak around.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. Had maybe the wisdom of planning. And so you'd see that coming together, and it's like, oh, this is an elite unit. And that's supposed to be the church. Paul gives those images of the gifts. This is one body. Everybody's got their part. And that's, I think, in play here with the armor, too, when we think of that collective defense.
Absolutely. So then what do we do then with specifically the faith element when someone's lived out faith is different than ours? How can we draw encouragement or learn from these folks who, you know, we love the same God. Mm. We have faith in the same God, but the way it's lived out, our training is potentially completely different. Mm. So like, for example, say I'm a businessman and, you know, I've been trained up in finance and I'm, you know, that's the world I live in. I live on Wall Street. And then you're a pastor. You've got some business experience, but you're working in, you know, a rural church area. How can we, and this, you know, there might not necessarily be anything super deep with this, but how can we learn well from each other's faith when the way we live our faith looks different? My faith as a banker might look very different than your faith as a pastor, per se.
Right, on a day-to-day basis.
On a day-to-day basis, sure.
Sure, I think a lot of it, too, is going back to some of those common elements. You know, what do we share? And even, you know, you and I might talk about how the enemy tries to, you know, fool us, and it might be quite different, but we know in commonality the one who's trying to undermine us and undermine our faith. So, yeah, your temptation might be different from mine. Or also, you know, we talk about, like, kind of love languages of the faith a bit, your expression of your faith. Like you said, I might love service. Well, you love, you know, doing particular kind of deep dives in doctrine, right?
Right.
Or someone else is over here. But saying like, well, these are all outworkings of the same faith. And coming back to that commonality, even, you know, you even mentioned too, these different expressions, not in a bad way, but we have different denominations that emphasize certain things more than another one does. But to see like, hey, we need that variety. And I can learn from that. And also I need that protection from that sister or brother maybe to stand with me, because maybe I'm blind over there and they see it. And maybe they're blind over here, but I can see it and highlight it. And I think that could be where we really are. I could learn, you know, so many in our congregation. It's so interesting, right, as a pastor. You know, you're having conversations and that, but so many of you listening are on the front lines doing this. I remember when I was working in construction and out there for those few years, just different conversations people got into because I was just out there working with them. And so I could learn a lot from you, like, what are people asking you? How are you interacting? Sometimes when people find out I'm a pastor, it shuts it down, right? They don't want to talk about it, or they kind of put on a little bit of a, you know, a different outfit, so to speak.
Right.
Act maybe a little differently. They're not as honest, whereas didn't find that when I was just another working guy who they found out I was a Christian.
Right.
So certainly we can learn from each other, learn, you know, how the enemy's maybe trying to get at us, learn how we can be better clothed in God's armor from different things we're experiencing. So, yeah, we need each other.
Yeah, that's really good. Another thing I thought was really interesting, as you pointed out, these shields that we're talking about were usually decorated with the standard of Rome printed on them, or often anyways. You knew instantly whenever an army was coming through that, okay, this was the Roman army, because all of their shields had, you know, and we see the same thing today, whether that's with armies or whether that's with just whatever groups are around. We tend to dress in ways that identify what groups we belong to, whether that's a musician's T-shirt, whether that's a cross necklace, whether that's a politician's hat, whatever it is that we've got, you know, we tend to do these outward symbols of what inward group we belong to, what inward faith we belong to potentially, whether we put our faith in musicians or what have you is a totally different thing. I know for a lot of the time for me when I was in middle school, it was those pun-based Christian T-shirts. So it'd be like a ketchup thing. It was designed like the Heinz logo.
Yep.
It's like ketchup with Jesus or
relish
the Lord or you know, things like that. Yeah. And this is maybe a bit of a lighter question, but is this kind of outward identification useful? You know, on the one hand, it can really clearly delineate like, yes, you know, we love the Lord. This is the standard that our faith is. Our faith looks like Jesus, our faith looks like the CRC, our faith looks like whatever this is. But on the other hand, I could see there being some potential issues with that, maybe making it a little performative. So I was just wondering, what are your thoughts on some of these outward depictions of our inward faith?
Yeah, it's a really interesting conversation to have, right? Because I guess like anything else, there's always some good pieces, and then we can always go too far with it and misuse some of that. As you were asking that, I was thinking, you know, really from the earliest Christians, as far as we know, had certain even symbols they used to kind of identify with each other. I mean, you could think of the fish symbol, of course.
Yeah,
and that, you know, this obviously even their identification of the movement as the way, we hear that terminology in Acts, and of course, and then eventually the term Christians itself, those kind of were identifying marks. And some of it was kind of even underground a little bit to say like, oh, okay, you see that symbol and you know this is one of us, right? That sharedness. And I think in the best way, that's the good of it, right? There's a sharedness. If I run into you and we're both you know, wearing something like the ketchup shirt or, you know, whatever it is, or even a cross or, you know, I can feel like, oh, this is somebody who probably shares faith with me. And maybe we can talk and even have a comfortable conversation, even not knowing each other, some things we share, maybe even struggles we deal with. So that can be a very good thing. I mean, we even have sold clothing. You know, Austin and I both have polos, Friendship Church, right? And there's even a local identification we have, I think, which is good. We're walking through life together. But, yeah, we can misuse it, too. I mean, it can be a performative. I think you use that word. Of course, sometimes we put things on and don't even think about what we're representing. That's maybe more true of the cross. Mm-hmm. It just becomes a decorative piece, and it's right. not really thought about what we're putting on there and pointing to. Other times, maybe we're trying to fool ourselves into saying, you know, like, oh, yeah, this is really important to me. I know it should be, but it's maybe
right.
not.
Right, so at least I'm wearing this. Yeah, you know, at right. least I've got this.
Right, kind of an outward... you know, expression right. that's not really the case in my heart. You know, in Chicago, growing up in that area, people who grew up in the city just loathed when people from the suburbs would say they were from Chicago.
Yeah.
Right. So that kind of.
I've heard about that from Chicago folks. Right.
That performance, kind of like, you know, taking on that identity when it's not really the case.
Mm-hmm.
I could see where they're coming from, right? Yeah. Just like, I think sometimes if we hear someone maybe in a media kind of setting, TV setting, mm-hmm. say, something about being a Christian, and maybe we're a little skeptical at times, and we say, I don't know if you really are buying in on that, right? So there's things we need to be careful sure. about. And yeah.
So then in a similar vein, obviously, you know, only the Lord knows the mm-hmm. status of a person's heart. But are there ways that you've found where we can identify whether we specifically are being more performative with our faith specifically? Or where we're making it more of a symbol rather than actually relying on it?
Yeah, you know, I think Jesus gives us some clues, right, when he talks in the Sermon on the Mount about some of these performative things when it comes to prayer. You know, when you pray, you don't go to the street corner and basically put on a show, mm-hmm. right? You can go to your room, close the door. Basically, he says, go to the only room in your house that has a lock on it, pray there. Or when you do your giving, right, or your fasting, don't make mm-hmm. it so obvious. So we can do that even in worship. Right, and kind of be performative. This is maybe where some of the Reformed hesitancy comes from with some of the expressions of worship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not all just stoicism. Maybe a lot of it is, but some of it is also like, hey, you know, we're not just trying to put on an outward show. There is this inward, you know, part that's got to be right first
right.
and foremost.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, if we're just doing it to be seen, right?
Yeah.
That's a problem.
Yeah.
Because God does know. That's Jesus' assurance. He knows your heart, like you said.
And I think that's so important is that, and I've caught myself over the years doing this where, you know, I'll do or say something. I'm like, great, this way people are going to know that, you know, I love Jesus. Or this way, if I do this, people are, and I'm like, that's not really what that's about. Mm. Like, I'm not doing these things just so people know it.
Mm-hmm.
I should be doing these things because I actually love Jesus.
Right. Right, yeah, that's where kind of the, we kind of put the horse ahead of the, you know, or the cart ahead of the horse, right? You know, to say like, well, I'm going to do these things so that it's like, well, no, you just, you have it.
Well, and like, am I wearing this shield or holding this shield just to look good, or am I holding the shield because I'm actually in battle?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm actually going to use this,
mm-hmm.
and I think Jeep people are one of the best examples of this that I've seen, and people joke about this. This is all said in jest, but you know, there's the Jeep people that actually need the off-road Jeep.
Right.
They're the Jeep people that are actually going to go mudding, and they're going off-road, and they need the Jeep that can do that. And then there's the other Jeep people who really just have it so that they look like they're that kind of Jeep people. Like, you know,
like
that
Jeeps.
You know that car has never left the highway.
Yeah, right.
And I'm, you know, trying to make sure that, like, we've got this faith. Let's actually be living it out and not using it merely as, like, a status symbol.
Right. Right.
So,
yep.
Going to a little more hard hitting now. We know we're not immune to challenges in life. And we also, in the same hand, know faith can help extinguish all the flaming arrows of the evil one. And then we get into a tricky balance here, because we're living in faith that's supposed to protect us from these attacks of the enemy, and it's from all the attacks of the enemy. And yet the attacks of the enemy sometimes still sneak through, still happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really tricky thing to hold both things as true.
Mm-hmm.
You can look at, you know, and just for a really dramatic situation, you can look at, and I throw this out all the time, but like our immigration situation, you know, we were living as we saw very faithfully as best we could. And then this huge attack happened, and we ended up having to deal with this major separation for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a tricky thing to hold intellectually, but then also the way people talk about faith can get a little messy with that. you've heard people say sometimes, you know, well, this bad thing happened because I wasn't praying enough, or I wasn't being faithful enough, or you weren't being faithful enough, or clearly there's this sin that you have to repent of. And it gets really complicated and messy. How there's so much to unpack there, but how do you wrestle with some of these questions?
Yeah, this is a really good piece. And it could come up from a bunch of different kind of conversations, this whole deal of, you know, God makes these promises, and Jesus speaks sometimes very powerfully, you know, about prayer or about the protection. The Psalms will lay it out. But we live in this world. There's still brokenness and evil. Things happen. How do we make sense of that, right? Mm-hmm. That's in large part what this is. Because you're right. The enemy, of course, is still attacking. He's not just saying, well, you know, faith, they have the shield of faith, so I'm going to give up.
Darn.
You know, he's going to come after us even more and find ways in. And so I think overall, when we think about this protection, we think eternally versus temporally, right?
I think that's an important distinction.
It is, yeah. We talked about with our men's group that meets Wednesday mornings some of the language of one of the Psalms, right? And how easy it is to misappropriate some of this. Like, even we quoted Psalm 91. That's a psalm that really talks strongly about the Lord's protection and keeping us from harm. But that, usually in mind, is this eternal, long-lasting, we're not going to come to ultimate ruin versus I'm never going to stub my toe here on this earth.
Right.
And that's hard, though. When you're in the midst of it, you think, like, what have I done wrong? And that's maybe a different facet of this question, to say, where does our lack of faith connect with some of the things that are happening maybe in a negative sense? And I think you're right. We can misuse that. In general, I would say I have to be aware that I live in a broken world, that I am still a person on my way to holiness, still being sanctified, as we would say. And so I'm going to mess things up too. And there are going to be consequences for both of that, right?
Yes.
And so things are going to happen because of my own sins, because of the brokenness around me. However, to try and correlate one-to-one can be a dangerous game.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's clear, you know, David, you had this affair with Bathsheba. Here's the consequences of that, right? And this is, you know, that's laid out there. Other times it's not so clear. And so I can't, you know, maybe just, you know, try to get out from my own sin and say, God, it's your fault. You did this. I have to own my own responsibility and brokenness.
Yeah.
But we have to be careful, because we can really play into the schemes, I believe, of the evil one when we start to pin things on ourselves or on others that isn't so clear.
Well, and one thing maybe to draw, and we'll see how this analogy continues to draw out, but so you're a soldier, you're in the army, you've got this shield and you're marching and you trip and and something slips through. That is not the fact that the shield is still, the shield is there and it still works, but you may have made a very small mistake. And so part of that could be, yeah, you know, this is what we're talking about. Like, I do have my own sins. I'm still a sinful human.
Sure.
But we don't then just immediately go back and don't change anything about how we're marching. We would adjust ourselves so that this doesn't happen again.
Sure, yep.
And so another good, I know this is another good exhortation for us to do that self-reflective work and be like, okay, where have I been messing up? What can I change and do to more fully live a faithful life? To use this tool that has been provided properly.
Yeah, I think that's a great example, Austin, because you think about soldiers going out, and like sometimes things just come up. Like, oh, we're planning to fight this battle. All of a sudden, it's a rainstorm, and you are not dressed or prepared for the ground, the terrain, how it's going to be different now. But hopefully you come back the next time. You're like, well, if it rains, we're going to be ready with this footwear, or we're going to step differently this way so that we're not getting off balance. And you're right. Hopefully we're learning as well. Like, yeah, the enemy got one in on me there. I'm not going to put myself in that situation again. I'm going to watch out for that. I'm going to armor up because I know where
it's
he's
like,
trying
to
get
me. It's like, oh, I was missing my boots. I was missing my belt. I was missing any of these other elements. That's a good reminder. Let's put those back on.
Right. Just like, you know, I put my hand on that stove. That hurt. That was hot. Let's not do that
and
again.
I think what's important about that is recognizing that whether it is originally partly something that you could control, or some, you know, whether it was you didn't put the armor on properly or it rained, you know, you could control it or you couldn't.
Right.
That doesn't mean that we are not so redeemable. That doesn't mean that God is done with us or that we're useless or that our faith is awful. And I think that's something that's really important for people to remember for themselves a lot of the time, because there's so much self-deprecating approaches to this that I see all the time.
Yeah. And we can be overly hard on ourselves too.
Right. And so I think recognizing that, like, you know, we messed up, or this is a messed up situation. That doesn't mean God's done with me. That doesn't mean I should be done with myself either.
No. Amen. And Psalm 103, I read that recently, God knows who we are. He remembers that we're dust. And we need to remember that too. We're limited. That's why we need the Lord and his armor, be strong in him and his mighty power, because, we are limited. And God knows that. Jesus challenges his disciples, he chides them for their lack of faith at times, but he continues to work with them and guide them to grow their faith. And same with us. Mm-hmm. He's not just like, well, you had your one chance and we'd all be gone. We'd all be done for if that was the case. So that's not how God goes about it. And we should be gracious with each other and with ourselves in the midst of it. Not that we don't want to do it as best as we can, but there's grace.
There's grace. Well, on the flip side of this coin then, sometimes I feel like we try and use faith as like a bargaining chip with God. Mm. It's like, I'm praying this in faith that this will happen. Mm. And you see this tends to come a lot more in the prosperity gospel circles. But I think we're all really guilty of this at some point where we're like, I'm living so faithfully, I deserve something mm-hmm. better. I've been putting in the good work. It's about time something good happens. Mm. What are some of the warning signs that you can see if someone is using faith to try and manipulate God into doing something?
Yeah, maybe the language that you use there, another way would be pointing out, going back to our previous question to others, like, well, if you just had enough faith, that wouldn't have happened, right? That might be showing
I have enough faith, so clearly this isn't going to happen to me.
Right. I'm kind of controlling things that way through my faith. And that, when Jesus teaches about prayer, I think he makes it clear that you can't control God through prayer. And faith, of course, is connected with that. You can't just say, these three phrases, then God's like, well, I guess I got to do it. Right. He said the magic words.
Or he's been living so faithfully, I guess it's, I'll give him that reward now.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that actually, it gets on my nerves so much, because it feels a lot like paganism. Because a lot of what paganism tends to be is, there's this God of, we'll say the God of rain. Well, okay, I want it to rain properly, so I'm going to do the right prayers, do the right sacrifices, and then it will rain.
Yeah.
We do that in our faith, God is the God of provision. He says that he will provide for us. Mm-hmm. And so as long as we pray the right prayers and go to church the right amount of times, then we should be provided for. And I feel that's one and the same, and that's really missing the point of our faith.
Oh, yeah, you're right. It's opposite, of what we're talking about. It's all the Lord's work and his grace versus this kind of, if I do
quid
these
pro
things.
Quo.
Exactly. There's this transaction that goes on. But Jesus is the one who has done the transaction basically for us. And so I think you're right. That's a careful thing. And it probably goes back to just we get so tied up with our lives here on earth.
Absolutely.
And the way we want that to go. Because really, when you look at what God promises, and even Jesus' own journey, God does give his faithful one everything, right? Jesus is seated at the right hand, but he goes through quite a bit of suffering in the earthly journey, obviously, to get there. And I think that's the reminder for myself. And Jesus says, don't store up for your treasures here on earth. That stuff's all going to fade away. Store up for yourselves heavenly and earthly or eternal treasures where moth and rust and thieves won't destroy it and take it. And so that's the reminder. As we live faithfully, we want to see the immediate, like, I want to see my bank account grow. I want to see all the diseases go away. I want to see all my relationships flourish. When God is saying, when you put your faith in Christ, you're surrounded by this such that your eternal inheritance, mm-hmm. Which is worth far more than gold, is perfectly well kept. You have a co-heir with Christ.
Absolutely.
And so, yeah.
Well, and that kingdom perspective is so important when we're going through these hard things. I think of our, again, to go back to the immigration situation, it was 4 years ago today that, as of recording time, that my wife had to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in the middle of it, it's so easy to lose track of the eternal perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And not saying that that made those 3 years and 3 days any easier. Mm-hmm. They were still the hardest years of our lives.
Yeah.
But again, having the kingdom perspective and being like, okay, that was three really hard years. Now let's look at how the next 50 years are we're going to use that 3 years as testimony.
Right.
And keeping that kingdom perspective and that long-term goal in mind rather than our immediate, but I want it now, I deserve it, I've earned it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, those times always seem longer when you're in them, right? I think most people obviously can relate to the pandemic time and going through that. And I know different regions went through it differently, but relatively speaking, it was fairly short.
It was like 2.5 years, maybe three.
Yeah, as you look at it. But in the midst of it, just seemed like this, you know, just tragic, overwhelming, all-consuming piece. And it was. You think back to the stuff we were doing and going on, it's like, wow, it seems like an alternate universe. But in the grand scheme, so small. But it's hard when, for us, this earthly life is what we know.
Right.
And so we see the possessions. We know what kind of makes a good life as far as health and prosperity that way. But God's saying, I got so much more in store.
Mm-hmm.
Can you trust me? Can you see the path that Jesus has already gone before you and be clothed and taking up that faith so that you're protected even from the schemes of the evil one that would say, you got to get it now and do whatever you can to get it because this is the be all end all. So,
What are we looking forward to next week?
This coming Sunday, Memorial Day weekend. I know we'll probably have a lot of people traveling about and stuff, but going to continue in the series and getting into the helmet of salvation. And so obviously ties with some of the other pieces, but obviously the helmet protects a pretty vital piece of the body.
It's kind of a little important.
Yeah, and we need salvation, right? Just like we need that helmet. And so talking again, another small topic, what is salvation? And maybe we'll bring in, I know Austin and I have talked in discipleship conversations about all the language of salvation that comes into Scripture and all that. Just a wonderful, full-orbed picture of what God does for us. But yeah, how is this a protective element? How can we be putting it on? And looking forward to this week's conversation too.
It'll be very good. Well, thank you all for joining us. Thank you to those of you, by the way, who have provided feedback over the last week. We've gotten some really positive feedback from a few of you, and that's just always appreciated. We love hearing about things you like. And if you have any other suggestions or comments or trivia, I'm always looking for new trivia now. So feel free to let us know. Go in peace, and we hope to see you next week.